Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, December 26, 2015. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. Observers say the harsh economic situation in Zimbabwe is likely to worsen next year.
All these political hurdles, you know, they need to be reined on so that we come back to the scenario where we attract international interest with the IMF and international, you know, investors.
But ZANU-PF says the economy is expected to improve in 2015.
I don't agree with those kind of suggestions. I think they are very parochial and myopic, to say the least.
A Zimbabwean living in Turkey writes a book with 60 poems a few months after compiling the first one with almost the same number of poems.
This book is called My Africa in Me. It's basically poems set in Africa, mostly in Zimbabwe where I grew up. They look at the positives and maybe the not so positive side. It's not meant to romanticize Africa.
And as usual, we will take a closer look at women's issues. Observers say the harsh economic situation in Zimbabwe is likely to worsen next year. One of the observers, Rejoice Ngwenya, who is an independent economic commentator, tells Studio 7 the country needs to adopt strict measures to kickstart the ailing economy, which recorded a marginal 1.5% growth this year.
The answer lies in ensuring that the sectors that enable economic development are put in place. We need to resolve the energy crisis. Once that is resolved, then we focus entirely on the to-do business environment, which means all these political hedgehogs, these political, you know, mandarins like the Joao of the world, you know, they need to be reined on so that we come back to the scenario where we attract international interest with the IMF and international, you know, investors. So if we can tackle the issue of energy, we can tackle the issue of foreign direct investment, then we should be able to start generating enough demand for goods.
Now, what can work against Zimbabwe if ever it tries to transform the economy?
The worst thing that we are looking at now is fiscal space. Now, our government is very, very big and cumbersome. We are scrambling around to create more resources for the treasury. So the government will start borrowing internally and crowding out the market so that they won't be any more money to do business. Because we are busy trying to pay civil servants. So remember, we are facing a drought. So it's going to start getting to be very, very expensive to finance this government because we need to look for money quickly in order to sustain the citizens that are going to be facing starvation. So in other words, the market is completely going to run out of money. Forget about diaspora submission. The biggest enemy that we are looking at now is the lack of money in the local market.
That was Rejoice Ngwenya, an independent economic commentator, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. But London-based ZANU-PF member Nick Mangwana says the economy is expected to improve in 2016.
The projections for Zimbabwe are primarily based on the deals that have been signed with the Chinese. We need a full operationalization and the culmination of those deals, because once the infrastructure is set up, then Zimbabwe can be on a good pathway to recovery. So I think that's the biggest hope. And we also hope that the re-engagement with the rest of the world continues, because Zimbabwe cannot afford to have enemies. So the more friends we have, the better the prospects we have for our country. Those are the caveats to the success of Zimbabwe.
But there are some critics who are saying that these mega deals won't do anything to Zimbabweans, like, people won't get any direct benefits. Do you agree with those kind of suggestions?
I don't agree with those kind of suggestions. I think they are very parochial and myopic, to say the least. The deals are focused on infrastructure development, and the infrastructure is the enabler of economic recovery. So you need good communication networks, you need power generation, you need roads, you need railways, and so on and so forth. Those are the things that would enable the economy to take. If you say that focus is not the one that will help recovery, tell me what it is. Donations? Briefcases full of money coming to Zimbabwe? No. It's actually economic stimulation through infrastructure development. So that's why there was a focus on those particular deals.
And some people talk about foreign direct investment being impeded by the indigenization law. And they're saying if this doesn't change, the situation will be worse next year. What is your comment on that?
I know a lot of people say that, but I think the message is very clear on what the indigenization entails. Indigenization entails the resource sector. So I do not think indigenization on its own, besides this demonization, impedes foreign direct investment, because it's basically like if you want to go and get oil in Saudi Arabia, you can't just go and extract oil in Saudi Arabia. They've got their conditions, and so it applies to every other country that has got its core resources. So when it comes to that, I would challenge those people to tell me of a serious investor that wanted to invest in Zimbabwe and did not because they of the indigenization. They want to do gas in Russia, you're going to bump into the same thing. So it's not the indigenization, it's the demonization of the indigenization agenda. It's a deliberate ploy to make it sound like it's an obstruction to foreign direct investment. But the message should be very clear and consistent. That, I think that's one of the things that would help with foreign direct investment. And there is no underplaying the role of foreign direct investment in Zimbabwe. We need it. It's actually very important because every country does need it. So we cannot do it on our own. We do not have enough money flowing around Zimbabwe to be able to invest. So we need money to come from somewhere. And that is through investment. We are not looking for donations. We are not looking for charity. We're just looking for investors and partners. That's all. So obviously for somebody to partner, there should be something in it for them, and there should be something in it, and which basically the 5149 in resource-based sector seems to be quite logical, to be honest.
That was Nick Mangwana, a ZANU-PF member, speaking with Studio 7 from London. Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA. A Zimbabwean academic, Toliwe Ndebele, living in Turkey, has written a book with 60 poems a few months after compiling the first one with almost the same number of poems. Ndebele tells Studio 7 she enjoys writing poems.
Is called My Africa in Me. It's basically poems set in Africa, mostly in Zimbabwe where I grew up. They look at the positives and maybe the not so positive side. It's not meant to romanticize Africa. It's meant to portray it the way I see it and the way other people see it as well, because some poems are written from different perspectives other than myself.
I see that this book is coming at a time after you produced the other one, Deep Deep Blue. So what actually inspires you to do some of this kind of work?
I've actually been compiling poems for quite a long time now. What inspires me is hard to say. When something comes to my mind, I usually start writing. I carry notebooks in my handbag. I use my phone at times. So it could be an incident. It could be a memory. It could be something someone says that triggers off a poem.
So now, how many poems do we have this time around?
60 poems.
That sounds like so many of them, right?
Yes, they're quite a lot, actually.
And there's one that actually attracted me a lot in terms of what you're writing about, While He Was in Wenela. Right. What is it all about? Can you recite that poem?
While he was in Wenela, betrayal at its worst, Brutus and Caesar recast in Africa. Fragile trust like a spider's web cannot be mended or made whole again. A messenger turned thief, a friend your fool. Old age commandments goes, look not thy brother's wife. Mean zero in sight of the apple in Eden. Mere virtue and reason were holiday making when lust ravished the wanton, singled for your brother. That innocent man toiling away in the mines in South Africa to feed his family and be a man among men. You, a friend indeed, are a beast of bad seeds. That last born with a big head is yours. Such weakness, such selfishness, I wretch and expel the emptiness that matches the darkness of your mind. Cold, heartless envoy who preyed on the woman hiding the jackknife against one you called your brother. Sadly, a friend now turned foe.
Can you explain it a little bit?
Basically, if you know, in Zimbabwe, a lot of people, especially Matabeleland, work in South Africa in the mines. So they go and work in South Africa for almost a year and come back home around December. It's about a man who has been asked by his neighbor to look after his family for him while he works in South Africa. So this neighbor goes beyond neighborly duties and starts looking after the wife as well. And eventually they have a child together. And then the person who's writing the poem looks at the whole situation and says to the neighbor, that last born of that family has a big head like yours, so that's your child. It's not your friend's child, the one who's working so hard in South Africa to feed his family. It's basically looking at trust, the betrayal, the reference to Brutus and Caesar from Julius Caesar, Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. And there's a lot of imagery of hiding the jackknife behind, and you pull it out when the person is not looking and you stab them in the back. That's what it's basically about.
Do you have some kind of specific market for this kind of good work?
Basically, these poems are about Africans, right? So they would appeal to people in Africa, but they appeal to anyone because things like love, betrayal, friendship are universal themes. So even though they are set in Africa, they appeal to the world at large.
Do you have any message for the international world, including Zimbabwe?
If one has the will to write, they should just do it. There's a lot of things I think we all reflect on as people, but at times we are afraid to write. We fear being judged. We fear being labeled as failures and so forth. I think if you write without saying, I'm writing in order for people to read this, but you write as a form of expression, then for me, it becomes a lot easier. I don't write with a specific audience in mind. I write to get thoughts out of my head on paper or on computer. It's a way of just retelling myself things that are in my subconscious at times.
That was Toliwe Ndebele, a Zimbabwean living in Turkey, speaking with Studio 7 from Istanbul. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. Radio personality Ezra Chisaspanda has rescued a 17-year-old girl, Simisani Ngobe, who was detained at the state-owned Bulawayo United Hospitals after failing to pay $300. Sibanda tells Studio 7's Chris Gande he was touched by Ngobe's plight following her detention after giving birth at the hospital.
What I did is to talk to the hospital authorities that I want to assist. I'm going to call my friends to follow me on social networks to assist me. And we managed to raise funds. We paid the bill for the hospital, nearly $300. We paid for the medication. We paid for the blood test. And then finally we bought clothing for the unborn child and also gave her money to use to register at the Puna Bay, the hospital, which is 20 kilometers away, where she lives, back home in the rural area. So it was really touching, Chris. That's why we decided to help.
Are there any other people who are detained because they cannot pay the fees?
It's shocking. If you come to Bulawayo hospitals, I don't know in Harare, but I understand it's the same uniform all over Zimbabwe. People come in here and get treated, and then they find themselves refused or detained, that they need to pay something to the hospital. I found quite a number of people, a 75-year-old grandmother who actually sent the son to go and sell a beast to raise money to come and release her from the hospital. It's so touching. There are a number of people who remain detained. What they say is that you have to pay something, and then on paying something, you have an agreement that you have to pay the full amount. If you don't, they will send bailiffs to come and grab something or sell your beast or sell anything to recover the hospital fees.
That was Ezra Chisaspanda, former ZBC broadcaster, speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo. Efforts to reach hospital authorities were fruitless as they were not responding to calls made by Studio 7.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and Belarus recently convened the Second Working Group for Democracy and Human Rights. The two sides discussed their shared OSCE commitments to uphold freedoms of expression, peaceful assembly, and association, the importance of facilitating space for the development of civil society and independent media, and best practices in the area of rule of law. The United States welcomed Belarus's release of six political prisoners in August and urged Belarus to take additional positive steps in the areas of democracy and human rights. In particular, the United States called on Belarus to take steps to conduct its upcoming parliamentary elections in line with the standards of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. The United States noted that enhanced respect for democracy and human rights in Belarus is fundamental to improving bilateral relations and is essential to the prosperity of the country. The United States also remains committed to supporting Belarusian sovereignty, territorial integrity, and independence.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As usual, it's now time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Tonight on the Women's Forum, we are gladly joined by Mrs. Rita Nyampinga of the Female Prisoner Support Trust, which works with protecting the rights of imprisoned women. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Mrs. Nyampinga. Tell us about your organization. How does it help to protect women prisoners?
Female Prisoner Support Trust was founded in 2012. Our work is mainly premised on four areas, which are rehabilitation, reintegration, reformation, and reconciliation. Because in all these four areas, here is a prisoner who doesn't know where to go, because most women, when they are arrested, they have no fallback position. Some of them are even afraid of going back home because of the stigma and discrimination associated with being in prison. People have never given a chance to these women why they commit these crimes. They are quick to judge them. But we are saying what we have discovered whilst we are working with them, that most women, when they go to prison, the main drivers of committing crimes are poverty. Some it's greed. Some it's ignorance of the law itself. What does the law say? If I'm being beaten by my husband, what channels are in place in Asian women to use the provisions in the Domestic Violence Act? But they only know of this when they are in prison already, when they've committed a crime. So this is some of the work that the Female Prisoner Support Trust does. We also economically empower them, because when they leave prison, they have nowhere to go. They don't even know where to start from. So we give them just small loans to start over again. But we encourage them to do savings club. We started this year, that they have the savings club so that they can support each other. They can lend each other. They can support each other financially. We also counsel the family of the offender.
How many women prisoners are there in Zimbabwe currently?
The figures vary between 450 to 600.
And what would you say you've noticed in 2015 as having been the main cause of why women are being imprisoned?
The poverty levels are very high. So women trying to fend for the family, they can end up doing some crimes, committing crimes, but not that they know that they are committing a crime. We speak of selling these lotions, the highlighters. That alone is a crime. But why is that woman selling the lightning cream? She's selling the lightning cream because she's trying to earn a living for the family. And maybe the husband has been retrained from work, and she starts engaging in other activities that are equivalent to crime. And others is purely gender-based violence. There's a lot of violence that comes in when things are not right at home, especially economically, when the husband is not bringing any food on the table. There's a lot of violence. And the woman herself, because of ignorance of the law, she doesn't go and report. She just decides one day to strike back. And when a woman strikes back, she strikes harder. The husband dies. She is arrested for murder. Although the Constitution of Zimbabwe in 2015, women are not being hanged for committing those crimes. But we are saying let's minimize those crimes by reporting any cases of domestic violence.
Time is not on our side. Thank you very much, Mrs. Rita Nyampinga of the Female Prisoner Support Trust, for having been our guest on the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. We hope you are going to have a wonderful weekend. Now to recap today's top stories. Observers say the harsh economic situation in Zimbabwe is likely to worsen next year. A Zimbabwean living in Turkey writes a book with 60 poems a few months after compiling the first one with almost the same number of poems. And prominent radio personality Ezra Spanda rescues a girl detained for failing to pay hospital fees. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gande. This is Kip Stube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening and a very, very good night.